Welcome to Tube Talk, the show dedicated to helping you become a better video creator so you can get more views, subscribers, and build your audience. Brought to you by vidIQ. Download for free at vidIQ.com.
Welcome back to the Tube Talk podcast presented by vidIQ. I am your host, Viper, the man about tech, executive producer here at vidIQ. And this week, we need to take a few moments to observe what is happening in the world. Yes, most of y'all know what I'm referring to. I'm talking about the conflict happening over in Ukraine. It's hard to not take notice of what's happening with what's going on over there. And I wanted to take a few minutes on the podcast today to acknowledge the Ukrainians over there. We have a few Ukrainians on our vidIQ team, and I was actually in a company meeting with them the other day, and just seeing the or hearing the anguish and seeing the looks on their faces. I'm not even sure why they were in the meeting, but they didn't have to be there. We completely understand what's going on, and we just want to send our love and thoughts and well wishes to them. But a couple of them were on that call, and just seeing them and hearing them, it just made it hit home so much harder. And we as a company are taking a firm stance in how we are approaching what's happening with Ukraine. Again, we love our Ukrainian team members. We support them vehemently, and we are taking an upfront public stance on this. We stand with Ukraine. Make no mistake about it. VidIQ stands with Ukraine. If you're listening to this podcast right now and you want to donate or support the conflict in Ukraine to support the Ukrainians, I will leave links in the show notes of this podcast so you guys can do that. I myself have already donated to the cause, and I would highly recommend those of y'all who are understanding of what's going on with the Ukrainians to please take a moment of your time and go down there to the show notes, search out those links and donate. No amount is too small. Whatever you can donate, anything will be greatly appreciated because the Ukrainians need our love. They need our support. Anything that you can do is greatly, greatly appreciated. But like I said, I just want to take a moment and acknowledge what's going on over there because we as a company, we are feeling it for our team members. We're feeling it for the people over there fighting and dealing with the conflict on a daily basis. And it's an unfortunate situation, but we want to bring attention to what's going on over there. We want to shed some light and try to provide some positive vibe, positive energy to our Ukrainian brethren over there. And on our team, we fully support you. And as I said time and time again on this podcast, we stand with you. On the podcast this week, in a few minutes, I have the former YouTube liaison, Matt Koval, joining me. And obviously, we'll talk about the things that he was involved with at YouTube, like the job duties of a liaison, different things like that. He has since left the post, so he is no longer the liaison, as I alluded to. He is the former YouTube liaison. But I think it'll be a good move to have him on the podcast to get some insight, because I feel like creators don't respect the gravity of what YouTube as a platform has to deal with on a day-to-day basis. So it would be interesting to get the perspective of a former YouTube employee and just talk to us a little bit, hopefully, about what YouTube has to deal with as a platform that creators don't have any idea of what YouTube has to go through to be able to support the platform at scale, especially considering how large YouTube is as a platform, how influential, and how much YouTube depends on advertising revenue and different things like that. So hopefully we'll be able to have that chat with Matt when he gets here in a few minutes. And I think that'll be a good perspective for creators to have as they go about their creative journey on YouTube. Because again, there's a lot going on behind the scenes that we as creators will never have knowledge of or access to, or never understand what YouTube does or why YouTube does the things that it does as a platform. But hopefully we'll get some of that here in a few minutes with Matt Koval. We have to respect the platform because the platform is why we have the opportunity that we have. The platform is why I am on here talking to you all right now, because vidIQ was built off the foundation of the YouTube platform. We are a YouTube education company at our core. We love YouTube. We support YouTube. And we have to respect the things that YouTube has to go through as a platform to evolve, to grow, mature, and still do things that are in the best interest of both the platform and the creators on the platform. There are things that are happening or that have happened or will happen that creators might not always be okay with. Unfortunately, that is a consequence of running a large-scale business as YouTube is. But some things are necessary, and they are necessary business moves. I've talked before about how you really can't take business things personally. And sometimes creators, they take business stuff personally. And when you are moving at the scale of a platform as massive as YouTube, business, it has to be at the forefront. And creators have to be mindful of not to take some of the decisions YouTube makes so personally, because YouTube has to make the best move that they are making for their business. Because we all want YouTube to continue to thrive and grow. Because if YouTube wins, we all win. So we as creators have to want YouTube to continue to grow and evolve as time goes on, because we all know that YouTube is actually facing some competition now in the form of other platforms on the rise, such as your TikToks and your Twitches and different things like that. So YouTube has to do the things that they need to do to remain competitive. It's still the best platform, in my opinion, for creators to grow and build an audience and a community and a business. Whatever you want to do, you can do it on YouTube. But with that, I think we should get into the podcast and talk to Matt about some of these things and see what he has to say. So with that, let's roll to the podcast. So welcome back to Tube Talk, presented by vidIQ. This week, we have my man, the now former liaison of YouTube, Mr. Matt Koval. What's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, great to be here. Yes, now former out of Google after almost 10 years.
Wow, that is amazing, man. So I wanted to bring you on here. I know, like we just said, you are now the former YouTube liaison, but I think a lot of creators have misperceptions about how YouTube works as a platform and why YouTube does some of the things that they do. So I was hoping to bring you on here to talk a little bit about that and obviously about what you're doing upcoming. But first question for you, Matt, what is the YouTube creator liaison job? What does that entail exactly?
Yeah, I think early on, the company rightly recognized that they were kind of bombing some of their communications to creators. And a big complaint they heard again and again, or we heard, was we just weren't communicating in the right ways or in the right tone. And so there's this guy over at Google Search, and his name is Danny Sullivan, and he's the search liaison. So he's a public-facing human being for Google Search. And the idea from, I believe, Sundar and Susan to all of Susan's executives was, could we do something like this around YouTube and especially for the creator community? And they looked internally first, and there weren't many employees who had been creators before. So I was asked to take on this job as YouTube's very first creator liaison.
So you just mentioned that you've been working with Google YouTube for 10 years. So I guess my next question would be, before you became the creator liaison, what was your role with YouTube?
Oh, I was one of YouTube's key content strategists for years. So I was an early creator. I started my channel actively in 2008 and ran it for 4 years. And then I was a part of YouTube's very first Next Up program. And that's where I met Google employees for the first time, and they ended up hiring me. And they really liked the fact that I had credibility as a creator, and I have a teaching background as well. And so I became one of YouTube's main teachers when it came to how to build an audience with a YouTube channel. And so I did that for a while. Then I managed the team of content strategists. And then I was itching to get my hands on a channel again. So I asked if I could take over the YouTube creators channel. And I became a manager of the production team for that channel for a few years. And then I was asked to do this creator liaison role. So it's been quite a ride.
Gotcha. So that kind of feeds into my next question of what made it appealing to you. But it kind of sounds like you relished the opportunity to be like a teacher per se in the guise of YouTube for creators.
Exactly. I really wanted to help with the frustration and confusion out there about certain things. As a teacher, I really like explaining things and, you know, educating people about how things work. And after I had seen all the challenges of a global platform uploading or handling 500 plus hours of video footage per minute, I wanted to help bridge that gap and help the YouTube community understand some of those challenges, and also help the company understand what it's like for a creator out there trying to do everything yourself, working on weekends, etc.
I want to dig a little bit more deeper into that, because you are one of the rare individuals that can see things from both sides, because you've been a creator before you were with YouTube, and then you were a creator liaison actually inside of YouTube. So I guess my first question along those lines to you would be, in your opinion, what do you feel like is the biggest misconception that creators have about YouTube as a platform?
I think creators often see this giant machine owned by Google owned by Alphabet, and they don't realize that it's full of hundreds of very caring, nice, super intelligent people who are trying to do the right thing. And when I was a creator, I certainly never met any YouTube employees. And so when I went to that first Next Up workshop, I was like, oh, damn, there are actually human beings that operate this thing. And that's one of the reasons why I was so excited to take on that creator liaison role, because I really wanted to help humanize the company. People try really hard, and despite what some may think, they really want to get it right. And it's to the point sometimes they're paranoid about getting it wrong. I mean, I feel like towards the end, half my job was to say, guys, this is fine. They're not going to be upset. Like, they're going to like this one. Trust me. And yeah, that usually was the case.
It's interesting that you say that, because I know I've talked about on this particular podcast about how creators need to have more empathy towards the brand that they are working with or trying to negotiate with. Because when you are dealing with brands, yeah, we normally see brands as the nameless, faceless entity, this, that, and the other. But as you just alluded to, there are whole human beings that work with these corporations behind these brands, and they have thoughts, they have feelings, just like we, the creators, do. And we have to be more mindful and respectful of their feelings when we are communicating with them, for sure.
It was helpful for me to work for different companies before I even became a creator, because I was an employee of different places. I worked at Sony Studios in California and Fox Studios for a while. I worked at a small special effects house. And yeah, you see people behind the company and realize they're human beings like the rest of us, and they have these challenges, and they're working hard to get it right. And I think for some creators who have never had a full-time job, it's easy to misunderstand and feel like, oh, it's just a big machine out there, but actually there are people running it.
So you have a unique perspective, because you said you first started your YouTube channel back in 2008, and we know that YouTube as a company became a thing in 2005. So I'm curious, from your perspective, what are your thoughts on how YouTube has changed as a platform from 2008 into what we have today?
Oh, wow. Well, back then it was not a very legitimate platform at all. In fact, you know, I was in Los Angeles trying to become a screenwriter and a director, and I had some success. I was working in indie film. And when I switched over to YouTube and I started wearing wigs, like I did this series called The Fooplers, where I played a family of four bickering at the dinner table, including a little girl in pigtails. And I had just come off as the DP of a Chris Pine movie. I was the cinematographer on a Chris Pine independent movie. And my friends thought I was absolutely nuts. And I think they were even embarrassed for me. They were like, what is Matt doing? And over the years, they've come back around and like, Matt, can you show me how you did that? Because I see this is the future. And I was like, yeah, I can show you.
It's crazy to see how YouTube has grown from what it was back in the day to what it is now, and all of the different opportunities that it has presented creators as far as building audiences, building businesses, different things like that. I mean, YouTube is such a mega entity today. And again, back in the day, in 2008, it wasn't that. But now it's just like this whole big conglomerate where anything is possible if you put in the work and put your mind to it. So pretty incredible.
Yeah. And to that point, there's one little detail I'd love to cover while you're on that subject, which is a lot of people complain that the Tonight Show hosts and like late night hosts are so prevalent on YouTube. And I've seen a lot of complaints that, hey, we're favoring them or featuring. I need to stop saying we, because I don't work there anymore. But the reality is that the more YouTube became legitimized in the world, those professional studios and networks and entities wanted to use it. And they're welcome to use it just as much as you and I are. Mm-hmm. And so what happened is, you know, you have professional comedians out there who have been doing comedy for years and are really funny. I mean, you got to give it to them. And their videos oftentimes would outperform my videos as a comedian. They didn't have the authenticity factor of just some guy wearing wigs in his dining room. But just you talking about the, you know, I was talking about the legitimizing of YouTube. You know, anybody was welcome to use it in 2008 as well. And so here we are, everyone's using it for better or for worse.
And to that point, I think a lot of the creators were worried that I think they felt like YouTube was pushing the bigger creators at the expense of pushing the homegrown YouTube creators. And I think that's where a lot of the creator concern was coming from, as you alluded to. But as you highlighted, anybody can use YouTube. That's the beauty of YouTube, that anybody can come on the platform and use it. And, you know, when you have these A-list celebrity and comedian coming on the platform, they aren't coming as a new YouTube creator that has no following. They already have an existing following that is going to follow them on the platform. So naturally, when they put out their first video, it's going to get hundreds of thousands of views and different things like that, because they already have that following that they're bringing over from what they were doing before YouTube to YouTube. So it's just a natural transition for them.
The evolution of the platform. That's right. And that's not to say they're better in any way. Again, they are kind of lacking the authenticity and color that we homegrown creators have. But, you know, they're in the game just like the rest of us.
Absolutely. I've seen a channel from Will Smith, Jack Black, The Rock on YouTube. I think a couple of years ago, Brie Larson got on YouTube. So, yeah, they're coming on here doing their thing, and more power to them. So, again, I feel kind of bad because I keep talking to you about your time at YouTube and being a liaison. But, I mean, we are a YouTube education company, so that's where we're going to go with it for now. But I got to ask you, in your time as a YouTube liaison, what was your coolest experience as a YouTube liaison?
I really like the fact that I was given a pass on the inside and a big mouthpiece on the outside. Or I should say, like, I was given the license to speak for the company in some ways. And I was also given a free pass to knock on any door internally and ask what's up. What's up with this change? And I love that, you know, and, you know, I was representing a lot of creators in that way. And to the company's credit, I mean, most executives would take that knock on the door and let me come in and communicate some of the grievances that creators had and frustrations. And so in that way, I do think there's more work to do. I think with the next liaison, I hope they have even more influence and access on the inside. But ultimately, I just loved being able to help in that way, because I very much recognized that there was a disconnect in the communication.
Gotcha. Okay. So they would have my head if I did not ask you about one of the biggest decisions that YouTube have made recently. Now, I don't want to get too much in the week, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, but since I have you here, I have to ask. Recently, YouTube removed the dislike counter. And I remember you saying that initially you were not for that change, but at some point you came around. So talk to us a little bit, as much as you want or don't want to, about that change and how you felt about it.
Yeah, I was surprised when they first announced it internally. And I said, why would we do that? What about tutorials? What about the fact that it's a signal that viewers have? And so, speaking of viewers, I mean, let's start with the viewers and then we'll get to the creators.
Okay.
In my opinion, did the viewers lose a signal? Yeah, they did. Was it an important signal? That's the debate. And it depends who you ask. A lot of viewers came to me afterwards, friends of mine, just who use YouTube as viewers. And they said, Matt, I don't get this. Like, what are people so pissed about? I don't think I've ever even disliked a video, they would say. And I've never even looked at it, really. But of course, as we know, Viper, there are thousands and thousands of power users of YouTube who came out and said, this is awful. This is one of the last signals we had to help ascertain if a video was trustworthy or not, or good or not. And I agree with all that. So, you know, an example, somebody came to me and said, Matt, how am I supposed to know if these tutorials on calculus problems are accurate now? Like, I'm a student, a math major, and what am I supposed to do? And those, you know, other people, of course, what about the scammy videos out there? Those are legitimate concerns. And again, in my opinion, viewers definitely lost a signal. Viewers did not gain anything by this. But that was a sacrifice that YouTube was willing to make, in my opinion, for the creators. And so let's talk about the creators. And this is something that a lot of people glossed over when they made videos about this, or they said it was BS. I was pretty shocked by that. A lot of people said, oh, they're just lying. And then they moved on to all the things that viewers were going to lose. And it further told me that there was more work to do as far as the disconnect. Creators are the lifeblood of YouTube. I think you'd agree that without creators making videos, there are no viewers, no advertisers, and the whole thing kind of falls apart.
Right.
So in my view, it wasn't about protecting creators from criticism. It was about protecting them from the kind of mob-like behavior of some viewers who would kind of descend on creators because of who they were and just like pile on to that dislike button and get that counter up as high as it could go.
Yeah, and that was one of the aspects that we talked about a little bit, but not too much. the dislike counter was literally being weaponized against creators. And like you said, people would like have that mob mentality where they would literally go to a creator's video and dislike bomb them. And as we know, that's one of the metrics that the algorithm uses to judge whether video is worth putting out. And when you are dislike bombing a creator's video, you are harming the potential for their video to be shown. And it was just not a good look. So I'm surprised that it wasn't highlighted more, but that was definitely, I'm guessing, part of the reason why YouTube's like, yeah, we got to get rid of this.
Yeah, I actually don't think that's accurate. I don't think the dislike, because they fixed that long ago because of dislike brigades.
Okay.
So it wasn't limiting your chances of being surfaced. If anything, it was limiting your chance of being surfaced for that particular user. But still, imagine, you know, for any viewer who's listening right now, who's never put themselves out there as a creator, imagine you spend about 2 weeks working on a video, you finally upload it. I mean, you're really proud of it. You hit that publish button and you're so excited. You just hit refresh to see if it has any views yet. And the first thing you see is like 12 dislikes, and it's a 10-minute video. So how could anybody have seen the whole thing? And, you know, that's the type of experience that many, many creators have. And as I said in the announcement video, like if you never experienced it, there's a tendency to feel like it doesn't exist, but it absolutely does. And it's sad because there are very cool features that have to get taken away because of abuse. And there are very cool features that are brought up in internal meetings that, oh, wouldn't this be cool if we could do this? And then people bring up what are called abuse vectors. And they go, you know what? We could never do that because of people abusing. They would abuse that feature.
Right.
And so, you know, people can blame YouTube or they can blame the people who weaponize these features. But yeah, I wish that YouTube had spoken about it more. But at the same time, you know, it's their platform. They're going to make these decisions based on the things they're seeing, and we got to move on.
Yeah, I don't think the dislike counter is coming back. So speaking to that and other metrics of analytics and different things like that, since you were a creator, I mean, you still might be a creator, I'm not sure, but you know how the creative process works, and you've been on YouTube for a very long time. So a new creator trying to grow a channel on YouTube, Matt, what, in your opinion, is the most important analytic that a new creator should be paying attention to as they're trying to grow a channel?
All right. This is outside the question, but if there's a metric around passion and interest, and stay with me because I know some people will be like, oh, it's such a cliche. But listen, you got to pick something that you are going to still love talking about 5 years from now.
Yes.
All right. I've experimented with channels on the side. In the early days, I was like, wow, gaming's taking off. I think I should. And I wasn't even playing games, video games anymore. If you don't have that passion around the subject, you're going to run out of gas in the tank when it gets tough. So for God's sakes, make sure you love this topic. Make sure it's something that you talk about ad nauseum and people are like, please stop talking about that. There's probably a community out there. So that aside, then you want to figure out your format. Just start making videos, see what works, improve, get your rough draft videos out, put it out there, let the system start to soak in your channel and understand what it's going to be all about, and just start uploading. And video after video, it's getting better and better. And finally, much down the road, like you got your series set up, your format, and now you're cranking maybe one video a week. Take a look at your CTR, click-through rate, and your audience retention. Mm. Now, don't obsess about it, but those are two key metrics that the system looks for to decide if a video is satisfying to each individual viewer.
Yep. We talk about that all the time with VidIQ. CTR and audience retention, a very important metric.
This episode of Tube Talk is brought to you by the VidIQ mobile app. You can download it for free on the Android or iOS app stores. And it's here to help you do things like keep track of your competition, research your next video idea, optimize videos you've already posted, and more, all on the go. This is the perfect app to have literally in your back pocket while you're out and about and you find yourself with a few free extra minutes. Having the opportunity to sit down and optimize your latest video or research ideas for your upcoming video can be a game changer and save you a bunch of time as you work to create more YouTube content. Again, you can download the VidIQ mobile app for free on Android or iOS. Just search for VidIQ.
I want to kind of knock down one of probably the biggest misconceptions I've heard since I've been a creator on YouTube, and I don't believe it, but a lot of other creators do believe it. And that is, Matt, Now, there's a lot of smaller creators out there that feel like YouTube does not care about them. What would you say to them?
I think they do. It's just the challenge of scale. You know, there are millions of creators out there. There are many millions in YPP, the YouTube Partner Program. The company has a certain limit of employees trying to support all these people. The creators in the partner program have to be prioritized because there are our partners or YouTube's partners, right? And so they are generating revenue for themselves and for the company. And so a lot of energy and effort goes to those trusted creators. And so it's tough to try to support brand new or small creators just because of the sheer scale and the amount of people using the platform.
Yeah, I forget what the statistic is, but there's like hundreds of thousands of hours of footage being uploaded to YouTube at any given time. And that encompasses a lot of creators. So like you said, obviously YouTube, you know, they're going to prioritize those in the YPP because, as you alluded to, they're the ones that are making revenue. But I don't think I've ever believed the notion that YouTube doesn't care about smaller creators, man. I just think that, like you said, they operate at such a global grand scale that it's hard for them to like kind of hone in on smaller creators when they have the whole platform to think about.
Yeah. Not to mention all the challenges around misinformation and people uploading, creators uploading videos, attacking other creators and that kind of stuff. I mean, unfortunately, those sorts of uglier aspects of the platform take up a lot of bandwidth. I did love helping people with my job on Twitter. You know, some people would tweet at me and I looked at their channel and they had 82 subscribers and they were asking for help. And I didn't care. I mean, I would try to help people no matter what, but it really is a challenge of scale. It's nothing personal to smaller creators. They try to do the best they can, but it's prioritization, unfortunately.
Absolutely. I've said before, in business, it's usually all about business. Business is not personal. A company or a creator is going to do the thing that is in the best interest of their business. And that's just how it works. It's not a personal thing. It's a business thing. And that's how we got to look at it. Go ahead.
That's right.
So you, sir, are leaving an opening in the YouTube office there as creator liaison. So I'm curious if you have any advice for any creators that are looking to fill your shoes.
Yeah. Did you apply?
I did not know.
I think I'm good.
I'm good.
The thinking internally is we gave the job to Matt. He had been an employee for a long time. I think I was a safe choice. And, you know, they put me out there to, as one of my managers put it, take a machete through the jungle and try to cut a path for this role and figure out what to do and not do and fall on my face a few times. Now that that path has been cut through, they're looking for a creator from the outside to come in and take over this role. And it's a very impactful role. I've been honored and humbled to have it. And it's a great opportunity to help bridge that disconnect that I've been talking about between the company and its community of creators.
Definitely. So I got to ask you real quick, what do you think about Mr. Beast offering his services at his own pace for to be the new liaison?
That's right. You know, I think they're actually considering that. But of course, 1 hour a week
you're right.
Isn't going to cover much. You know, no. I texted with Jimmy. He said he was serious. And, you know, I think he's willing to just react to things, you know, yes or no, that doesn't work because of this, et cetera. But it was funny to see him reply. And I said, you know, just a lot of meetings and emails and, you know, so that would be a different version of the liaison. I think in that situation, we'd have to have a panel of creators.
Yeah.
And maybe he would be one of them. And I think that's actually one of the things they're considering. I look forward to the day I get to introduce James as the next liaison for those who are not familiar.
Has anybody ever called him James? I don't think anybody's ever called him James. That's funny. It's either Jimmy or Mr. Beast.
Yeah, I call him James or JD just to be different.
Nice. Let's talk about what you're doing next, because obviously you left YouTube for a reason. You are moving to a company called Mighty Network. So talk to us about what you're going to be doing there and what that outfit is all about.
Yeah, I was really impressed with this private community platform called Mighty Networks, and it's a complement to a YouTube following or any big social following. And why it's great is that you can take your favorite fans and pull them into this private community where you charge access for just being in the community, online courses, one-off live streams, and you can charge whatever you want. And actually, the median amount of money that creators charge inside a Mighty Network is $40 a month. And so it's per member, I should say. So it's a great way to monetize. And the cool thing is, once you get everybody in there, you're working on a project together of some sort. So it's especially great for coaches and trainers and people trying to reach a goal. The members basically communicate with each other, and it becomes like a group project in some way. Another example would be maybe a big digital artist out there on YouTube or TikTok or Instagram starts a community where everyone's going to make their first NFT and sell it, you know? So I thought it was just a very cool compliment to a big social platform and a great opportunity for me to learn something new, especially having talked about YouTube since 2008.
So I guess my first question is, how if Mighty Network differ from something like Discord or Patreon or even YouTube channel membership?
Yeah, there are lots of nuances. With Discord, it's kind of like holding a party in the middle of a concert in a way. People are very transitory. They're going in and out, and it's very real time. Like if you check your Discord in the morning and you realize, oh, there was a hot topic being talked about last night, but now 8 hours has passed and nobody's talking about it. I missed that whole thing. And so there are several differences with each platform, including Facebook groups and Patreon. And there are cool nuances that I'd encourage people to check out.
Okay. So what exactly will you be doing with Mighty Network?
So I'm going to be their head of creators, basically, and I'm going to be representing creators who use Mighty Networks. We have a couple big creators like Matthias and Yoga with Adrian. They're big YouTube creators who use the platform for their community aspect. And I'm also going to be out there continuing to talk shop about big social platforms, the ups and the downs. I very much want to continue to be a part of the conversation on Twitter and doing these sorts of podcasts. So I'll be out there talking shop still.
Okay. Awesome, man.
How about you, Viper? What's next for you? Continuing the tech channel?
So I don't know if you're aware, but I started my YouTube career in 2018 and I was uploading on my Viper channel, but the channel had some challenges and different things like that. So earlier this year, actually on January 1st of this year, I decided to start completely over with a brand new channel. So I'm in the process of trying to grow this brand new channel from scratch. Right now, we're sitting at about 869 subscribers and going up. So I'm just trying to work on building this brand new channel from scratch. I pretty much left the old channel behind, and that is my focus here in 2021.
Good. Yeah. Well, keep at it and let me know how I can help. I just don't have the official access anymore. So
it's all good. You know, I mean, that's the other thing that is pretty interesting, because I think we both know that sometimes when you want to get in contact with an actual human being at YouTube, it could be pretty difficult. But Team YouTube on Twitter is pretty legit. Those people are, I don't know who they have running that Twitter account, but they are pretty responsive. And a couple of issues I've had this year with the channel, they have responded pretty quickly and handled it pretty quickly. So shout out to Team YouTube on Twitter. They get stuff done.
Thank you for saying that. They work really hard, and that's a team of human beings who really personally care about creators, and they've gotten better and better. You know, some people complain that some of the replies are kind of like canned responses sometimes, but, you know, keep in mind they respond in something like 40 different languages around the world. It's a huge challenge, but they're doing a great job.
Yeah, I would attest. They are definitely doing an amazing job on Twitter for sure. So, Matt, any parting word for new creators starting their journey this year? Any words of wisdom from you?
Yeah, well, back to my first point about just making sure you love it. Make sure you prioritize your well-being. Don't quit that job quite yet. You know, don't quit it too soon. It's easy to get wrapped up in all the success stories of huge influencers, like just totally cashing in. But, you know, there's quite a middle class in between of creators who are just really working hard to grind it out and get there. And you want to make calculated decisions in your life when it comes to your own finances and work life. So keep it a hobby for as long as you can, in my opinion, and don't take that leap until it looks like a safe one.
That is some definitely good sage advice for sure. Now, will I be seeing you at somebody like video conference this year, like a VidCon, VidSummit, and things like that?
Yeah. Yep. I've already been asked to be a part of a fireside chat at VidCon. So I've been to, I think, like 11 out of 12 VidCons at this point. Yeah. You know, I think one of these days I'm going to retire from VidCon because I just feel older and older every time I go there.
Not this year, because I think this will be the first time I'm going with VidIQ this year. So we got to be in person this year. That'll be cool.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd look forward to that for sure.
Matt Koval, man, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. For those of y'all who want to follow Matt, I'll have his information in the show notes. So definitely go down there, check him out. The dude is legit. Appreciate you making the time, man. Thank you.
You got it, Viper. Appreciate it.
No problem. Appreciate you all of you all listening to another episode of Tube Talk presented by VidIQ. I will be back next week with an all new episode. So for those of y'all out there, enjoy your week. And I'll be back next week with VidIQ.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tube Talk brought to you by VidIQ. Head over to vidIQ.com/tubetalk for today's show notes and previous episodes. Enjoy the rest of your video making day.